Although we may think of autumn as a sort of winding down period, for birds, it's as much a season of renewal as the spring. In October and November, we embrace the annual arrival of our winter birds, which spent their summer in breeding territories far to the north. In many parts of the lower 48 states, autumn is the time when the juncos arrive. The arrival of dark-eyed juncos is so characteristic of the colder months that many people call them simply snowbirds. The white-throated sparrow travels well into northern Canada during the breeding season. But in autumn, you'll find them kicking up leaf litter from the east all the way down into Texas and even into the southwest. And October and November mark the southward move of those massive white birds, the swans. In the fall and winter, tundra swans fly to wetlands in the west and mid-Atlantic. While the larger trumpeter swans return to the Pacific Northwest. So, welcome back, and thanks for giving new life to the winter landscape. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
I have to just say something. They said the swan is the northwest, but it's southwest because British Columbia. You got it geared towards the United States, those things. but they come here to Vancouver.
Right? They do.
Yeah,
you're happy with a little local Bird Note content.
Well, they got it wrong. They said north instead of.
Well, I guess Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, well, that's still, we're south, okay, whatever.
Yeah. just before the Bird Note there, we had Sleater Kinney from a new release called Frayed Rope Sessions, and that track was Say It Like You Mean It. Next up is Gardening With Embark, and then we'll be back to talk a bit about the history in Canadian
BC British Columbia.
Politics. British Columbia, not yes. Canadian politics. British Columbia politics.
Yes.
All right. It is time for Gardening with Embark. And as with every week, joining me in the studio now is Pablo Vimas, Gardens Manager for Embark Sustainability Society. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So we're into week 42, and every week the weather is telling us a little more and more that the outdoor growing season is coming to an end pretty
Correct.
Soon.
Correct. Yeah. So this week we have cold temperatures as well as some rain. And the forecast for the weekend is very, very wet, which very much tells us that, yeah, the season is over. In campus, we have seen all the trees losing their leaves. And yeah, landscapers are very busy collecting them. As well, we are in the garden collecting leaves for mulching those open garden beds.
Yeah, so what we wanted to talk about this week is some of the different philosophies of gardening. I think perhaps this is, for many casual gardeners, maybe something they're not really that aware of. So we're going to talk about one of those today. So
that's
maybe
right.
Maybe you can just tell us a bit about that, yeah.
Yeah, so let's focus that the type of gardening that we do is kind of a short version of farming, and a commercial farming where we use lots of chemical fertilizers. And then we have moved to being a more organic, so we don't use any more chemical fertilizers. But however, we still use the agricultural practices developed for a farm. So then we have different ways of gardening. As I mentioned last time, around 15, we have the gardening in rows, square foot gardening, agriculture, lasagna gardening, and other more. But behind that, there are a series of ideas and concepts that I call philosophies that we unknowingly we use. And one of those is called the biodynamics. the biodynamics is bio comes from life, and dynamics is the energy. So the life and energy working together in order to grow food. So biodynamics is working with the energy that creates and maintains life. The main aim is to create a self-sustainable ecosystem that promotes soil health, biodiversity, and the well-being of plants and animals. So, which again brings that the garden shouldn't only be for plants, but as well we have insects, we have rodents visiting the garden, and now and then some mammals. Yeah, so the biodynamics have some interesting concepts that were developed in 1924, 100 years ago. So this year, the biodynamics of BC, we have an institute here in BC, is celebrating the 100 years of this philosophy. And perhaps the farmers will and gardeners will be familiar with gardening by the moon, following the moon stages or phases, and then you do agricultural practices according to the moon calendar. So that's right. One of the main things that is common, but there is more about that.
You're right. How would that following the moon phases sort of play out in sort of practical activities you'd do?
Yeah, so with biodynamics, we have that we are working with the energy that exists in the planet Earth. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but as well in the cosmos. And so that is the background of this philosophy. We know that the moon has an effect on water in planet Earth, mm-hmm. as we can see when we visit the seaside. Yep. And the same concept say, well, if the moon will also have an effect on plants and animals. And yes, we have, as sometimes I explain to my students in the cohorts, like, well, we have all these stories about werewolves, about the moon having an effect on peoples. You have the shapeshifters. Well, it has an effect on our own body and therefore on plants. So following that effect of the moon on our energy, we follow the stage, like for instance, when it's a new moon, so it's no moon in the sky that we can see, we think that this water is in the roots of the plant. Mm-hmm. And when we are in full moon, the water is in the leaves of the plant.
Right.
And the half moons is when the water is moving from up to down. So for gardening activities, a new moon, we will be harvesting all the root vegetables because we have this, the vegetables will be full of water, so nice mm-hmm. and crunchy. And when full moon, we'll be harvesting all the vegetables that are giving us leaves.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what's. And then if we want to control weeds, well, it would be nice to do that when it's in full moon. So mm-hmm. we control the leaves because the water will be on the leaves and the root will be no water. So so those are kind of practices. There is a beautiful calendar that a local magazine from Langley called Heart and Soil, they publish a biodynamic calendar where we can do all these agricultural practices following the moon.
Yeah, that sounds like it'd be really handy, and just you could get that calendar and then use it as your guide for when to do.
Yes, correct. Otherwise, you will have, as a gardener, you will have to develop your own calendar month by month. So this week is this kind of moon, the next week is this type of moon, and these are the activities that I should be doing in the garden.
That sounds like a really nice way to you know, I mean, gardening itself is a lot about staying in touch with the earth and living things, and this sort of takes it, adds one more aspect to that, which is really quite neat.
Yes. So during true gardening is just not growing food, but as well as growing ourselves and being part of nature. That's what we like to be part of the nature. And as I mentioned previously, when we garden, we try to read what is around us, what nature is doing around us, mm-hmm. and try to copy that in the garden. And the best way is biodynamic calendar that helps us to tune what is happening around, following the big moon, which is, I think we are coming soon to have this big hunter's moon, and mm-hmm. everybody's talking about this large moon that is going to show up. So biodynamics is one of these practices that we can start implementing in our gardening.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. That's very interesting. There's other philosophies, and next week we're going to talk about another one. Can you give people a little teaser on that?
Sure. It's a philosophy that was developed in the mid-1970s. Yeah. And it was developed as a way to create a self-sustainable ecosystem. And that was developed in Australia. So nowadays, that philosophy has moved from agricultural domain to the cultural domain. So now, if you are building a house, a community, doing any project, you try to implement their principles and ethics.
Excellent. So we'll find out more about that next week. Quickly tell us how people can find out about more about Embark. And there's an event you have coming up this week, a harvest event.
We might have a bit disconnected this week with the garden being so demanding at the moment with this transition that we have. Yeah, so Embark Sustainability is a nonprofit organization based in SFU Burnaby campus.
Yep.
And you can find us through our website at embarksustainability.org or through our social media channels at Embark Sustainability.
Excellent. Thanks so much for this insight today, and we look forward to hearing more about the next one next week.
Thank you
for joining me.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
And Embark does have an event coming up this week called Savoring the Season Sustainability. Explore the benefits of seasonal eating and supporting local food. That's going to be on Wednesday, October 30th this week, 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. in the sub-community kitchen, room 2125 in the Student Union Building here at SFU. Visit the Embark website at embarksustain.org. Pablo mentioned there to get more information and to register for that event. I do want to make a note that we are now 1 week away from our annual fundraising drive, where we are looking to you, our listeners, our listeners and supporters, to support the station with a donation. We have it's very important to the station to get your support to allow us to continue the good work we do here at CJSF. So when you're tuning into the station next week and you hear people talking about Fund Drive, we're really counting on you to step up and make a donation. Support your favorite show. Maybe that's this one. We've talked, I think, about a lot of important issues and brought you a lot of interesting guests this year, and I hope you've enjoyed that. Maybe you're a regular and avid listener of Democracy Now!, which we bring to you every week, every weekday at 11 o'clock, or one of our many local shows here produced by our volunteers. So I hope you will step up and make that donation. You can do that anytime by going to cjsf.ca/donate and make a donation through our donation page. You can anytime this week or next week, never too early to get started, but we'll hope you'll step up and do that during Fund Drive, October 28th to November 3rd. Peter.
So I'm going to talk about the history of British Columbia politics.
All right.
Now, British Columbia joined up Canada 1871, I'm old enough to remember the centennial they had for that. They had a.
I thought you were going to say you're old enough to remember that.
No, it's old enough to remember the centennial.
Yeah.
They had a prospector and his wife as the symbol. Anyway, I digress. Now, what's sort of interesting here, the actual place where they meet, the architectural structure, the parliament buildings in Victoria, was completed in 1897. And actually, construction started 1893, and they moved in 1898. Now, what's interesting...
And that's the building we have now?
Yes.
Okay,
so... The era of the political parties don't really start to 1903, but I'm presuming if they had a building, you would have just had like an independent, like he wasn't affiliated with any party. Now there was one exception to that. There was in the 1890s, there was one party that was a party, but okay. So when you get the parties, it's 1903, and the Conservatives 1903 to 1912, 1916, and 1924 Liberal. The Conservatives win the 1928 election, and Liberals win 1933, 37, 41. Now, what happened 1941? The forerunner of the NDP. CCF, Cooperative Commonwealth Federation, got 14 out of the 48 seats, 12 to Conservative, 21 to Liberal. So something was called a Liberal-Conservative Coalition, and that won for the 1945 election, 1949. Then we come into the era of W.A.C. Bennett, who is the FDR, I guess, of British Columbia, some people might feel. One thing, it's always bad to read directly, but this is actually one of the legacies. It's the Columbia River Treaty, and this is from Wikipedia. In 1961, Canada and the United States signed the Columbia River Treaty to jointly manage this important resource. While the signatures were the federal government of Canada and the United States, Premier Bennett was reported to play a major role in the negotiations. Under treaty preservations, the U.S. paid British Columbia of that money in 1961 and $75 million plus interest for the downstream power generation rights for over the following 30 years. BC used the money to fund construction of dams on the Columbia River for power generations and flood control. And some people feel that was a bad deal. I don't know. Have you heard about this previous, Magnus?
Just a little bit. I don't know much about it.
So that was... I've 40 years ago, I read the book I got beside me here about, it's called W.A.C. Bennett and the Rise of British Columbia. I looked a bit at it over the weekend. The other thing is that where social credit came from, it was 20 years. And then after that, under his son and later Van der Zamen for a brief Rita Johnson,
yeah,
it went to 1991. The yeah. NDP blip was 72 to 75,
yeah.
Dave Barrett. There's a book, I couldn't get it at the library because it's stolen or something. It's called 1,200 Days, The Broken Dream.
Yeah.
So up until 1991,
and that book is that about the NDP?
Yes, 100. It was 100 and 200 days, and it was seen for a while as not good by some quarters. By the way, ICBC came about during that time, and I don't know whether that was I never learned how to drive. I've heard bad stories about ICBC, but. So basically, social credit was 1952 to 1991 was that NDP blip.
Yep.
What sort of happened was that when W.C. Bennett's son, and he was premier from 1975 to 1986, he sort of got away really from the general principles.
Yeah.
A social credit, the ideology, and actually in many ways, W.A.C. Bennett from the beginning got away from what was the thrust of what social credit
was. Yeah, social credit is a movement that started in maybe the 20s or the 30s.
It was the 1920s.
Yeah, and
by a specific gentleman, Major Douglas.
Yeah.
Who was a an engineer. It's based, well, anyway, I'm going to go. What it was that it came into power over in Alberta in 1935.
Yeah.
The problem was that you really needed federal powers to have it come through because it was an idea of changing the whole economics, the monetary system.
Yeah.
It was to have everybody be given a guaranteed income, actually,
yeah,
which makes it ironic for Bill Bennett to be against PIFO and welfare in 1983, and the whole thing that happened was that.
But, of course, by the time the Social Credit Party in BC came to power, they weren't espousing that at all.
Well, supposedly, was my departed friend, Ken Borno, who died in 2006, he was born in 1950.
Yeah.
He says me to the very end, W.A.C. Bennett would sometimes spout the concepts. One thing I was born December 9th, 1962. I start remembering 1966. Here's one thing two things are sort of afterglows of the W.A.C. Bennett reign is that. The highways, and we'll see if Magnus remembers this, they used to have these gobblers. Of course, I was so young, I was suckered into it. It makes you want to put the garbage into this thing. they're like outer space things. I mean, the garbage cans look like an outer space alien. And so I was so young, they said, oh, Peter, you got to put the garbage in there. That was sort of kind of the era of W.A.C. Bennett. Also, there was the B.C. building, and that had the Challenger map in it.
Yeah.
And then they tore the whole thing down at the P&E grounds.
Yeah.
And made a park out of it. But it used to be up until like the mid 70s. That was something all year round. It wasn't just the P&E.
Yeah.
And it was kind of interesting. They had like a slideshow of hydroelectric development done to the Tijuana brass. You press the thing. And they also had like a light bulb. When you turned it, you could actually, it was your own power make the light bulb go.
I think they still have that at Science World. But the social credit ultimately became... And this is sort of one of the defining stories of BC politics, a sort of coalition of the right to bring in enough people to keep the NDP out. Right? So, you know, you used to have the Liberals and Conservatives, and they sort of got subsumed into the Social Credit Party and held power for a long time, except for the blip with Dave Barrett and the NDP, 72 to 75, and then they returned to power. And then, you know, the crazy Van der Zalm years, which saw the sort of disappearance of the Social Credit Party to be replaced by the BC Liberal Party, which initially was a slightly different party, more like the Federal Liberals, until they kind of got rushed by everybody on the right side of the spectrum to become basically the Social Credit Party or the right-wing coalition again. And they held power for quite a long time. In that role from what, 90, I can't remember when the NDP had a time in there in the 90s, and I can't remember exactly which year, but all the way up until the 2017
I just
election.
Want to bring something briefly in. I saw at a numerogic, that's coin and paper money club, from the 1930s in Alberta, They gave you this money, the Alberta money, and you had to buy a stamp to put on the back to make it still exist. And supposedly you couldn't really buy anything from it because it was like a but you could buy a few things. But I saw the one they had at the event. They had all the stamps on the back. So I saw a bit of their attempt in Alberta in the 1930s to do the social credit theories, which was to do your own currency and give some and guarantee with this currency. So people got it, but you could not pay your actual taxes with it.
Okay, we're just about out of time here. So any last comments?
No, we're out of time.
Okay. One thing I think is interesting in the history of BC politics, I'm going to be very quick about this, of course, we have a new party vying for power on the right again. The Liberals have imploded. They became the United and imploded, and now are gone. And I wonder, we'll see the traditional, the big power brokers in downtown Vancouver and the Chip Wilsons will exert their influence to pull that party back towards the center. So it's a bit more of a mainstream coalition. We'll see. It's interesting times in BC. But the NDP, they're still there. They've been there since the 40s, and they're still here now without all the crazy comings and goings.
And they were there before they were the NDP. They were the CCF.
All right. Thanks. You've been listening to Speak Up here on CGSF 90.1 FM. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!